Thank you, David. Good afternoon. I welcome you here into our church. I see you have successfully drove your cars with the heated seats, got here and parked in the parking lot, entered this building, climate controlled, restrooms, electric lights, all the comforts of home almost. You know, you don't have an ottoman to put your feet up on, but a lot of comfort. I hope you've had this opportunity. It's been up here for a few minutes to read the definition of the word endurance that is up here. It's quoted from two sources, one from a 1829 dictionary and one from a modern dictionary. They sound very close together. I am going to, this afternoon, tell you just a true story and some statistics and a couple of scriptures. I'm hoping that we don't lose sight of the subject, of the topic. I'm hoping that the topic is laser focused. One word, endurance. Endurance. You know, we're born in a world, as I kind of explained, our condition now, we're born in a world that we're at a disadvantage to be one that endures. And it's because we have it easy. We have it easy. I'll tell you, that might change. I'm not here to try to say that we're going to be doomed anytime soon, but it might change. But we do have it easy. Don't get me wrong. I enjoy the ease that we have. I like it. You know, it's great. But I have also traveled in other countries, in India and Africa, and have seen the way that our brothers and sisters live there. And I appreciate very much. I don't have to live like that. They have it much more difficult than we do. You know, I went with a brother. I took him to Africa. I won't mention his name. I hope it might slip out. I don't know. But I took him to Africa with me, and there we stay in a home that usually has electricity. You know, you can't really depend upon it too much, but it usually has electricity. It does have bathrooms with toilets that flush as long as you have water in your cistern, which is sometimes yes, sometimes no. But we live pretty good that way. And I took this young brother with me, his first trip there, and I was sitting at the table doing some work on my computer. He comes walking out to confront me. A roll of toilet paper dangling off of his finger. He says, "Brian, did you have to look extra hard to find the worst and hardest and roughest toilet paper in all of Africa?" I said, "No, it was easy. You know, you just grab a roll and that's what you get, you know. But it's a lot better than using an avocado leaf like our brothers and sisters do." But we have it easy, you know. I had to explain to him, this is not Burger King. You cannot have it your way. But we're used to that, aren't we? We're used to living in a world where we can have it our way. We have it easy, which makes us sometimes soft. You know, when I think about it, I kind of did a quick search. And it was, I'm going to give you some percentages. And of course, I used some various sites. So they varied a little bit, but it gives you an idea. And they were fairly close. But 1.2 billion people in the world do not have indoor lights. They don't have it as easy as we do. 18% of the world does not. Only 18% of the world owns a car. That means all the rest are by foot. They go by foot. Sometimes a horse. 4.5 billion people have no toilets in their homes or no indoor plumbing. I don't know for a fact, but I would assume that everybody in this room has all the above. Everybody in this room, maybe everybody in this room looking around, may not have always had all the above, but we probably do now. Which brings me to this definition: endurance. The lasting, the duration. Bearing or suffering the things that are in this world, continuing under pain and distress without resistance, without shrinking or yielding to the pressures. Suffering or patience. Modern dictionary, very similar. Sustained without impairment or yielding. Bear without resistance or with patience and tolerate, to admit of, allow to bear. Endurance. Endure the things that are set before us. You know, I kind of marvel that, David has a tendency to read a scripture ahead of time, and a lot of times he uses the same one. He didn't use that same one today. He used one of David. He didn't have indoor plumbing. He didn't have a car. But he says, I will dwell in the house of the Lord to the end of my life. Endurance. That's what he was talking about. He was talking about all the things that the Lord cared for him and put him in a place, maybe better than the rest of people because he was a king, but he had to endure. And he said, I'm going to. I'm going to trust in the Lord, and I'm going to endure. I'm going to tell you a story. Like I said, I'm going to tell you a story and a couple of statistics. You know, statistics I told you, they're not the ones I'm going to talk about. Something later. But I'm going to tell you a story. It's a true story, and maybe some of you have heard it. If you haven't, I think it's very well worth hearing, and it's worth rehearing. Even when I was researching it and coming up with the order in which things happened, I still am very much impressed with this idea. And keep in your mind this idea of endurance. Have you ever heard of Captain Ernest Shackleton? Have you ever seen and studied the event that took place when he made a cruise, he made a trip? He had a goal in mind. His goal was to do an expedition to reach the South Pole and establish a base at Antarctica's Weldon Sea coast. That was his goal. He had tried to do this two times before, and both times he had failed. But he's going to make his third attempt. He wanted to establish a base. So he acquired a ship. And he acquired a ship, and he promptly named it the HMS Endurance. Now, I had this story in my mind before I even started this sermon. And then I realized, hey, he even named the ship Endurance. You know, that's really something. It almost seems like he understood in advance, and since this is his third trip, he probably did very well understood the trouble and the trials that were going to be on the horizon for him and his crew, and that they were going to be ever present during this trip. But he had the mindset. He had the mindset. He put it right there on the front of his boat that he would bear that suffering without shrinking or yielding to the pressures that he would face. He and his crew would have to endure. Endurance. I'm going to make a sign of it. I'm going to plaster it right there in front of all everything. So he got this boat. And he's going to have this lasting duration until he reached his goal. Continuing under pain, continuing under distress, without resistance, without shrinking or yielding to the pressure. He would do it patiently. He set sail on August 8th, 1914. Remember that date? 1914, August 8th, 1914. He set sail from England with a crew of 27 men and one stowaway. The stowaway was the age of you guys right there. A young boy. I say a boy because he hasn't reached manhood yet. He wasn't old enough to be a sailor. But he said, hey, this looks like fun. I'm just going to jump in that ship and hide till we're out to sea. So he was aboard. Whatever was going to come, he was going to have to endure. Keep in mind that this story entails people of all ages. All ages. So the 27 men and the one stowaway took with them 69 sled dogs and a tomcat named Miss Chippy. I don't know why that was important, but they always told it. A tomcat. Their first stop was a whaling port in an island called South Georgia. And they spent 3 months and 27 days there. Then on October 5th, 1914, the Endurance and the crew set sail from South Georgia towards Antarctica. 2 days later, on December 7th, 1914, they entered pack ice. Ice everywhere. And they battled to push ahead. They had to go out there. They had to look for cracks in the ice. They had to find a path through this ice that was going to be before them the whole way. It got to the point where it was so strong that they had to start breaking up the ice by hand. They took big sticks with chisels on them and broke the ice by hand so that ship could creep through the ice and make its way. It wasn't an icebreaker. They had to break the ice. And she made her way 1,000 miles through that pack ice. Now, she got to the point she was 100 miles away, only one day of sailing on clear seas from her destination. And we're right there. We just did 1,000 difficult miles, breaking ice by hand, and we're one day away from where we want to be. 100 miles. But on January 18th, the ice closed in. It came around her. They tried to break it out. They were unable to. The temperature dropped dramatically, and the ice cemented them in place. And it surrounded the ship. And they weren't going to move. It had been 5 months and 10 days now since they left England. And they understood that they were trapped where they were throughout the winter. They weren't going to move. They were going to spend all this winter 100 miles from Antarctica on a piece of ice that trapped their boat. By the end of February, temperatures had fallen to a regular temperature of about minus 4 degrees Fahrenheit, nice and cold. In 1915, 1914, they didn't have the kind of coats that we had. They couldn't go to REI and get a good North Face coat. You know, they had coats of probably wool and a stocking cap and had to endure these temperatures. By the end of February, they were 4 degrees, and the ship was free again. They kept breaking the ice away to keep it from closing in, squeezing the ship, because the ice kind of grows. And they didn't want it to squeeze and crush the ship, so they had to get out every day and continue to break that ice around the edge of the ship. But regular blizzards and low temperatures kept causing it to freeze up. So it was a constant battle to keep the ship free from being crushed by the ice. And in their spare time, they'd go out on the ice pack and play football and hockey and regular games in the darkness of the Arctic winter. Everyone knew two things were going to happen. Either the pack ice would thaw and they'd be able to continue their journey in the spring, or it would hold the ship and eventually crush it. That's what they had to look forward to all winter. What was going to happen? They didn't know, but they were there. On Sunday, October 23rd, 1915, the Endurance had heavy pressure from the ice, and the first real damage hit them. It cracked the stern of the boat and twisted the planking, and she sprang a leak. She started taking on water. This is their home. This is the only place they could go out of the elements, was inside the hull of the ship. And now it was flooding. 4 days later, on October 27th, 1915, the ship was being crushed by ice. So Captain Shackleton ordered them to lower the lifeboats, their gear, their provisions onto the pack ice and abandon ship. So now we have no home. We're living on the ice. The men pitched a tent 100 yards away from their boat, from what they had called home, the thing that protected them against the elements. But as they pitched their tents there on the pack ice started cracking and breaking up, and they were going to sink in their tents. So they had to move. Forced them to move because of these pressure ridges that were opening them up. And their ocean camp had to be moved about a mile away from the fast becoming wreck of the Endurance. On November 21st, 1915, 15 months and 13 days, 15 months and 13 days after they had left England, the Endurance finally broke up and sank right before their eyes. And it was below the Weddell Sea. The 28 men of the expedition were now isolated on a drifting pack of ice out in the ocean, 100 miles away from any land. No ship, no means of communication with the outside world, and a very limited supply of food was available to them out there on a pack of ice. And the ice itself that they were living on and standing on was starting to break up under their feet. So on December 20th, Shackleton decided that it was time to abandon their camp and march westward, where they would come to the nearest land called Paylet Island. It had been 14 months since the Endurance was first trapped in the ice. They had spent that time there on the ice. It had been 5 months since the boat had sunk. So the men had a manhaul. They're 20-foot lifeboats across the ice. They had to pull them as the ship disappeared under them. And they had those boats in case the ice broke up, they could jump in the boats and stay afloat instead of going down in the water with them. A lot of work. The dogs that they had, why are they hauling them? The dogs that they had became their food. That's all they had to eat. On April 12th, Shackleton found that instead of making good progress westward, they had drifted on the ice pack 30 miles off course. However, they were in a position that they could look across the sea and see an uninhabited island called Elephant Island. It was about 30 miles away. So they piled into the three lifeboats that they had. The men were exhausted because they went 80 hours without sleep, but they had to navigate through freezing rain and squalls and seasickness and dysentery, and they had to row themselves at 30 miles to Elephant Island. On April 15th, 1916, they made landfall on Elephant Island. It had been 497 days since they last put their feet on solid land. But the land they were standing on was a deserted island and a constant freezing temperature. And the outside world was not ever going to come there to rescue them or know they were there. So Captain Shackleton, he said, I got to make a plan. You know, I'm the captain. I'm going to have to figure out what to do here. And he knew that he was only about 100 miles from their destination, from an island that had a whaling station. So in order to effect a rescue, he chose two of his crewmen, and they were going to get in a boat, and they were going to row and sail when the wind was right to the nearest inhabited island. And it was a place called, it was a whaling station called Deception Island. But now, since they had floated off course, they were 800 miles away from it. So he was going to be in a 22-foot boat with two men on a stormy stretch of ocean to make this journey. The lifeboat was seaworthy, but it had very limited means of equipment. It had a tent and a little bit of a tarp for weatherproofing to keep them out of the rain, but it was going to be difficult. They were going to go through a place that they expected to encounter waves that were up to 50 feet tall. They were already named the Cape Horn Rollers. This was a bad stretch of ocean. It was going to be freezing temperatures, and they were going to be poured on with rain and sleet and snow. So for 16 days, they battled monstrous swells and angry winds, and they had to bail water out of their boats, and they had to beat the ice off their sails. And they were soaked, and they continued to push onward. Well, you know, in those conditions, it's hard to navigate. They had some navigation equipment. They had a sextant. They had a chronometer. They didn't know the accuracy of it. And they depended upon the sun to set their course. Of course, it was storming. And the sun was disappeared most of the time. So they couldn't set the course. So they were off course. And when they found landfall, they found the island they were looking for that had the whaling station, but they were on the wrong side of it. The wrong side. The only thing that stood between them now and help was a mountain covered with ice and glaciers. They had no climbing equipment. They had no gear. But they were in a place where they could not do anything. So without taking any time to rest, they climbed the mountain. They got to the top of the mountain and found glaciers on the other side of it. And they had to sit down on the glacier and slide down, not knowing what was below. Was there a cliff that dropped them off 100 feet? Or would they find flat ground? No idea. We just have to do it. We just have to do it. They had to go where no human had ever been before. It took them 36 hours. They got out of their boats and started this climb. And 36 hours later, on May 21st, 1916, Shackleton and his two crewmen staggered into Stromness whaling station. Now, everybody at the whaling station sees these two guys. They were covered with soot from the blubber stoves that they had, hadn't shaved or had a haircut for, who knows, for many years. All dirty, all soaking wet. Where did they come from, you know? And who are these guys? And he explained to them what the problem was. Here's where we are. Here's where our crew is. We need help. But no one can believe that these three guys appeared from nowhere. So with help from the sailors at Deception Island, Shackleton made several attempts to go back to Elephant Island to rescue his crew. But they were all failed attempts. The weather did not accommodate it. They were going to have to stay there until the weather got better. What was left behind? 24 men and one boy were left on Elephant Island. They used the two remaining lifeboats to make a hut. They turned them upside down, put them on a little block wall that was there. Not a block wall, rock wall that was there. They had some fabric they used around it to keep the wind out. They had an old picture frame. They took the glass out and made a little window so they could see out what was going outside. They had a blubber-burning stove that provided heat for cooking and to warm the place up. The conditions were cramped, and the food was short. And it had been a long time since Shackleton had left to go get help. Was he ever coming back? Did they know? No, there was no communication. The young stowaway, young boy, he suffered from frozen toes, which they took him into under the two boats in the blubber stove and amputated them without any painkillers. On August 30th, 1916, it had been 2 years, 22 days since they left England. On a pleasure cruise, not really. On a cruise of endurance, yes. Shackleton returned with the crew to Elephant Island. And on the beach stood all the men. Every one lived to tell the tale. Because why? One word, crux of the sermon, endurance. Any one of them, every one of them could have gave up years before. Or days before. But they endured. Proverbs 24:10. If thou faint in the day of adversity, thy strength is small. If you faint, I mean you pass out, it means you go weak. You say, I can't do it. Just because there's adversity, then your strength is small. Adversity, affliction, anguish, distress, tribulation, trouble. The question is, do we let trouble, Do we let fear of events that the world bring you down because of the things that are happening? Are you in fear? Do these things push you away from what you profess you believe? What do you profess? It's you believe in Jesus Christ. You believe that God knows you. He cares for you. That you are going to be his bride that he's going to come back for. Can problems move you away? You know, Jesus, he said something in Matthew 24:13. But he that shall endure until the end, the same shall be saved. That's who's going to be saved. Those that endure until the end. Yes, there are things you need to do to be ready. And I would assume that most of you in this room have done them. But you have to endure. There could be all kinds of trouble on the horizon for us. We don't know. He says, you must endure to the end. I was thinking about that. Endure to the end. What does that mean? What were the conditions that he was talking about specifically when he said, you must endure to the end? What context did the Bible put this in that we must endure? In Mark 3:12, he says, now brother shall betray brother to death. There's one of the conditions. And father and son and children shall rise up against their parents and shall cause them to be put to death. There's a condition. And ye shall be hated by all men for my name's sake. There's a condition. But he that endureth until the end shall be saved. In Matthew 24:7, it says, for nation shall rise against nation. I think we are seeing that all over the world. And one of these days, our nation may be involved. Kingdom against kingdom. There shall be famines and pestilence and earthquakes in diverse places. And these are the beginning of sorrows. Just the beginning. Then shall they deliver you up to affliction. And they shall kill you. And you shall be hated of nations for my name's sake. And then you may be offended and shall betray one another and shall be hated one another. And many false prophets shall rise up and deceive many. And because iniquity shall abound and love shall may wax cold, but he that what? Endureth unto the end, the same shall be saved. 2 Thessalonians 1:4, so that we ourselves glory in you and the churches of God for your patience and faith in all your persecutions and tribulations that ye endure. What we're seeing in all these scriptures, it talks about all the things that were happening in the world throughout history, things that are going to happen in the world in our day, troubles that are going to come. We don't know what they're going to be. I'm not prophesying any bad thing, but history tells us that things are going to happen. We saw a collapse of a bank yesterday, the biggest bank in America. What's going to happen? Who knows? What's it mean to me? I might have to endure. I'm not the first. Shackleton and the crew. You know, I told you the dates. There's a reason I kept telling you those dates. You know, 1914. Man, that was a long ago, wasn't it? A long ago. I mean, gosh, 1914. That's like when Christ was born or something. I don't know. I mean, it seems like any date that's before you doesn't exist. It's just so long ago, it doesn't exist. I know I had that feeling. You know, now that I'm a little older, 1914 sounds a lot closer to me than it did when I was 5 or 6. It seemed like it was forever away. But I'm going to put it in a little bit different perspective. Let's look at the days of some people you know. Let's look at the days of your fathers or your grandfathers or some of you, your great-grandfathers. And we're going to use a beginning point of 1900. Now, I know that sounds like a long time ago to your young people. But you know, my grandfather was born just about that time. Just about that time. So it's really not that long ago. My grandfather lived in those days. I did get some of these statistics for this and these timelines from an article that was sent to me by my son-in-law. I added some more things. I investigated a few things. Take it for what it's worth. But if you were born in 1900, which is before 14 years before Shackleton set sail, at age 14, you're a 14-year-old guy. Now, that's a little closer to home, isn't it? 14 years old, you can relate to that, some of you. 14-year-old, World War I started when you were only 14. On your 18th birthday, World War ended, but 22 million people died. Later that year, that same year, the Spanish flu epidemic breaks out and sweeps across the planet, killing 50 million people. And it doesn't end now until you're 20 years old. By the time you hit age 29, the Great Depression begins. You can't find a job. There's 25% unemployment. The economy drops by 27%. It's hard to get money. It's hard to get anything. And you live through that until you're 33 years old. During that same time, if you lived in the Midwest, or on the Great Plains, you know, around this area, neighboring states, you're going to be experiencing the Great Dust Bowl, where your farm is just swept away. Your house is just full of dirt. You have no means of getting food, no means of getting money. You probably had to pack up and move because everything was being destroyed. By the time you're 39 years old, World War II breaks out. By the time you're 41, the United States of America is fully engaged in that war effort, and maybe your sons are out fighting the battles, risking their lives, maybe giving their lives. 75 million people have perished, and the Holocaust during that time kills another 12 million. Now you're 52 years old, and the Korean War breaks out, and the USA takes part in it. When you turn 62, the Cuban Missile Crisis takes place, and many people really thought this might be the end of the world. This might be the end. When missiles start flying, it'll destroy us all. At age 64, the Vietnam War begins. It goes on for several years, ending when you're 75 years old. Let's bring it a little closer home. You were born a little later than that. You were born in 1930. That was the year my father was born. You went on to see the attack on the New York City towers because the prophetic river Euphrates was dried up and the kings of the east came against America. And finally, you experienced the fear of the COVID epidemic. What is your perspective of those men and women that had to endure a life like that? They lived through these events. Do you ever think to yourself or say, these old people don't know how hard we have it in school. I mean, this is difficult. My computer keeps crashing. They don't understand how hard I have it. They understand. Some of these people are sitting in the pews next to you that have endured these things, and they are still here. They gave their life. They're continuing until the end. That is our call. Every one of us. No matter what happens, these people are our role models. They have endured struggles, problems, uncertainties. They're in our future. You can count on it. We don't know exactly what we're going to face in the future, but like our forefathers before us, like the old men sitting in our congregations, let us have the mindset. Let us take the title and place it in front of the world. We will endure. That's what we're called to do. We're going to see it through until the end. Even though we're soft, God has given every one of us the same strength if we're willing to endure these difficulties. We're all the same creatures. We all possess the same internal strength that Ernest Shackleton and his crew and the stowaway were born with. We have it. God gave it to us. It's in us to do if we have the mindset. It's in us to follow through just like our grandfathers and our great-grandfathers did. God promises people. He told the prophet Malachi that there is going to be conditions, there are going to be problems, but it ends with a promise. It says, "For behold, the day cometh. The day is coming. It shall burn as an oven, and all the proud, yea, all that do wickedly, shall be stubble. And the day that cometh shall burn them up, saith the Lord of hosts. That it shall leave them neither root nor branch." So there's just something going to come, and it's going to take people out. "But unto you that fear the name of the Son of Righteousness, arise with healing in your wings, and ye shall go forth and grow up as calves of the stall." Calves of the stall. It's a creature that's taken care of by its master. The master will care for us if we are his, if we are enduring, if we stay the course. He will care for us even in times of adversity. Endurance. How long must we endure? There's only one choice. If you want eternal salvation, it is until the end of this mortal life. That's our call. To put our feet in the course, do what we are told to do, keep the commandments, enter in to the body of Christ, and endure. God is going to send his son to rescue us. Are we going to stand there waiting for his return? I hope we all live in eternal life. May God bless you each.